It is 23 March. I'm Charlie Garrett, and this is the CG Midweek Prophecy Report. Rough times ahead. That and a lot of other things to go over on today's report. Okay, from the Washington Free Beacon, new Iran agreement would let Russia cash in on $10 billion contract to build nuclear sites. It hasn't been formalized yet, but if it is, this is supposedly a part of it. Russia's top state-controlled energy company is set to cash in on a $10 billion contract to build out one of Iran's most contested nuclear sites as part of concessions granted to the soon-to-be-announced nuclear agreement that will guarantee sanctions on both countries are lifted. Russian and Iranian documents show that Rosatom, Russia's leading energy company, has a $10 billion contract with Iran's Atomic Energy Organization to expand Tehran's Bushehr nuclear plant. Russia and the Biden admin confirmed that the new nuclear agreement includes carve-outs that will waive sanctions on both countries so that Russia can make good on this contract. We, of course, would not sanction Russian participation in nuclear projects that are part of resuming full implementation of the JCPOA. Russia's foreign ministry made a similar statement, saying that additions were made to the text of the future agreement on JCPOA restoration to ensure that all the JCPOA-related projects, especially with Russian participation, as well as Bushehr nuclear power plant, are protected from the negative impact of anti-Russian restrictions by the U.S. and the EU. The removal of these sanctions will provide Moscow's Rosatom company with a critical source of revenue as American and European sanctions crush Russia's economy in response to its unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. Moscow has served as the U.S.'s top interlocutor in talks even as the country's war machine rolls across the Ukraine. A State Department spokesman, speaking on background, told the Free Beacon the admin continues to engage with Russia on a return to full implementation of the JCPOA. As Secretary Blinken said, Russia continues to be engaged in those efforts, and it has its own interests in ensuring that Iran is not able to acquire a nuclear weapon. The official further confirmed that the U.S. will not sanction Russian participation in nuclear projects that are part of resuming full implementation of the JCPOA, such as work on Iran's civilian nuclear program. The U.S. will take actions as necessary to ensure that U.S. sanctions do not apply to the implementation of the JCPOA, nuclear-related projects, and activities by non-U.S. individuals and entities. Perhaps it is now clear to Moscow that, as we have said publicly, the new Russia-related sanctions are unrelated to the JCPOA and should not have any impact on its implementation. Gabriel Noronha, a former State Department Special Advisor for Iran and Secretary of State Pompeo, told the Free Beacon that Russia is being awarded a financial lifeline via the nuclear agreement, undermining international efforts to isolate Moscow. Rosatom's projects in Iran are crucial to the company's future financial viability. That's exactly why we should shut them down by disrupting their foreign contracts, especially those with a regime like Iran. We're doing the opposite. The U.S. should sanction Rosatom for its involvement in Russia's war on Ukraine, but in classic fashion, we're giving them full sanctions immunity that will stabilize Rosatom's finances. So it was just eyewash when they said that we're not going to take any Russian oil here because they're just feeding them from another direction. And this is going to cause a problem that will probably cause Israel to have to go in and blow up this nuclear power plant. Okay, that could be the hook in the jaw. It could also be that they find more gas and they start supplying it to Europe. One way or another, things are not going well in the world. And all of this is orchestrated by Biden and the people on the left in order to get Russian supremacy in the world, Chinese supremacy in the world, and to completely diminish the United States of America. Who is the one that's not benefited from this? The U.S. We've cut off Russian oil, which is fine. I don't agree with it personally, but we've done it. So our oil prices go up there. We're not getting oil from Canada. We're not pumping our own oil. We're talking about getting oil from Venezuela, even getting it from Iran. So everybody's benefiting except the United States of America in this, so that our oil prices go up, our economy continues to have inflation, our economy collapses, and then the commies can take over in whatever way they're going to do it. Everything is just bad that these people on the left are doing. It's good for them because they believe they're going to have their little commie happy times, but they have not read the end of the book of Revelation, where destruction is coming upon the entire world. They haven't read about the end times in Matthew or in Daniel. They don't know that what they are doing is setting themselves up to be destroyed. Anyway, from JTN, farmers hit hard by price increases, fertilizer costs as food price spike looms. Goods and services around the country are becoming increasingly more expensive, but farmers may be among the hardest hit as inflation, supply chain issues, and Russia's invasion of Ukraine are expected to send food prices soaring even higher. That impact is being felt by farmers around the country. The cost of fertilizer is up as much as 500% in some areas. Ukraine is a significant supplier of both crops and fertilizer materials, adding to the concern that the invasion will likely lead to shortages and price increases. Fertilizer prices for nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, called NPK, have exploded since December 2020. That fertilizer price increase is one of several factors expected to push food prices up even higher this year. Food prices are going to continue to go up dramatically. I was expecting food prices to go up about 10% in the U.S. before midterm elections. So, around August, another 5% or so to follow by the end of the year. You could see 20% food price inflation by the end of the year in the United States. That's a possibility. You won't see famine in the United States. Our food system is very, very resilient, but you will see shortages. Well, we could see famine because the lefties will take our food and send it to all the other countries that don't have food, and then there's going to be famine everywhere. That's just how the left does things. So I could see it happening, but we'll get to that whenever it happens. You won't have the same product selection that you're used to, obviously. These food price issues have only been egged on by a runaway federal spending, which has helped send inflation soaring in the past year. So basically what they're saying is we're becoming like the communist Russia back in the 70s and 80s where there was no food on the shelves. That's what they're looking to do to the U.S., destroy the U.S., destroy our economy that's been working all these years. People are happy, people are content, and instead divide the nation, get people upset at prosperity so that they can have their little communist utopia. Let them have it. From Just the News, deaths represent 1.3% of side effects reported for COVID vaccines, peer-reviewed CDC study. This is CDC study, 1.3% of side effects reported are death. 1.3%. Okay, now think about this. We talked about this in the past where they had that one thing, I think it was in the late 80s or maybe early 80s. I can't remember off the top of my head, sorry. But they had a vaccine, and that vaccine was tested in America. Five people died. Five people. 250 got sick, and they took it off the market. They said this is far too dangerous to put into the population. They have now acknowledged at the CDC study, peer-reviewed, 1.3% of side effects are death, plus a lot of other stuff. Deaths following mRNA vaccination against COVID-19 represent 13 out of every 1,000 reports, 1.3%, to the federal government's VAERS, the CDC's Atlanta-based researcher said last week. Another 66 reports out of every 1,000, that's 6.6%, were categorized as serious, resulting in inpatient hospitalization, prolongation of hospitalization, permanent disability, life-threatening illness, congenital anomaly, or birth defect. So you're up to 6.6 plus 1.3 is 7.9% of these things going on, deaths and all of those terrible things. According to their study published in The Lancet, VAERS is often dubbed a passive surveillance system because it accepts reports from anyone. Most reports come from manufacturers or healthcare providers who have mandatory reporting requirements. But as we saw in previous reports, they have not been doing those mandatory requirements or those mandatory reportings because they are afraid of getting in trouble and losing federal funds, etc. So many things that have happened were not reported. But at a minimum, we're at 7.9% of really bad things happening to human beings because of these vaccines. But the researchers said they also consulted an active smartphone-based voluntary monitoring system, VSafe, created in 2020. The data show that most reported adverse events, were mild and short in duration. Tell that to the people that lost their lives or that are laying in a hospital for the rest of their lives or that lost children. Most adverse events, 45%. That's what they say. They were mild and short in duration, with 18 to 49-year-olds representing a plurality, 45%, and females a supermajority, 75%. Mainstream media uncritically ran with the CDC's framing, with USA Today touting researcher David Shea's assurance that the death rate was expected. They expected 1.3% of death rate per 1,000. And yet, here we have this. People still going on and defending this, given the elderly population studied. So they're blaming it on the older people dying. About a quarter of reports were from ages 65 and up. A large subset of young people was almost entirely excluded, however. Minors. So they took out anything about minors, and so the numbers are skewed without the full representation of people. The study only reviewed the first 6 months of emergency use authorization. So we haven't even gotten into the critical times where they had, you know, their second jab and then the booster and then the fourth booster and the 25th booster and all the people keeling over from there. This is the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines that cover 340,000 reports and 299 million doses. So that's only the first 6 months. How many people have been harmed since then? From the Epoch Times. NIH, here, listen to this. We just have all of this death and mayhem going on with these vaccines. Next one. NIH calls for volunteers for study of allergic reactions to COVID-19 vaccines. Then you just take all the bodies out of the graves, line them up and show them to people and say, they're your volunteers, because it was EUA. They were not required to have those vaccines by law. And they took them anyway. So there are your volunteers, a bunch of dead people and a bunch of people filling hospitals. From Great Britain News. This is in the UK. Hospital staff told police their patient was not raped as alleged attacker was transgender, despite CCTV showing assault in a ward. Somebody's in a ward. A guy that says he's a girl, goes and rapes a woman, and the hospital said it never happened because this is a transgender. Baroness Emma Nicholson of Winterbourne raised the incident that happened a year ago. A whole year ago this happened with the House of Lords this week. Lady Nicholson said after the assault victim filed a police report, the unnamed hospital was contacted, but they insisted that rape could not have happened as there was no male in the hospital. She told MPs they forgot there was CCTV, nurses, and observers. Nonetheless, it has taken nearly a year for the hospital to agree that there was a male on the ward, and yes, this rape really happened. During that year, she almost has come to the edge of a nervous breakdown because being disbelieved about being raped in hospital has been such an appalling shock. The hospital, with all its CCTV, has had to admit that the rape happened and that it was committed by a man. So, transgender to everybody on the left means that this is really a female, but they have to admit in this case that it's a man. So is it a female or is it not a female? Like that guy that Biden appointed that became Woman of the Year when he's Man of the Year, according to the Babylon Bee, and then the Babylon Bee gets deplatformed from Twitter for it. It's insane. What is going on in the world is absolutely crazy. An investigation by police into the case is now underway. Lady Nicholson said such incidents arise because of the use of NHS's use of single-sex wards, which allow patients to be allocated into wards depending on the gender they identify with. I said 2, maybe 3 or 4 years ago when they first proposed this, that this is going to be a complete disaster. And every time we've done a report, it's been because it's been a complete disaster. She is calling for the police, known as Annex B, to be amended as it gives priority to trans people over women. They're giving trans people, males that I'm a female, they get priority over women and therefore threatens the dignity, privacy, and safety of female patients. Oh, but to the hospital, it never happened. From the Epoch Times, Australian government, I love this one. I just love it. Australian government does not have a climate duty of care, says a federal court. Finally, some good news. The Australian government owes no legal obligation to protect individuals from supposed harm from climate change. The Federal Court of Australia has ruled. On 15 March, the full bench of the court overturned an earlier decision that recognized that Environment Minister Susan Ley had to consider the potential harm from climate change when deciding whether to hand out mining leases. The action was originally brought by 8 high school students. They're letting the kids make environmental decisions in Australia, seeking to block the expansion of a major coal mine. Whitehaven Coal's Vickery Extension Project near Gunnedah in the state of New South Wales. At the time, Justice Mordecai Bromberg allowed the expansion to go ahead, but ruled that the minister had a duty of reasonable care not to cause injury to children when exercising her decision-making powers. However, Justices Alsop, Wheelahan, and Beach found otherwise, stating that such a duty was a matter for the Parliament and not the courts to determine, while also finding that a duty of care was inconsistent with the Environmental Protection and Biodiversity Act. Alsop said the minister only had minimal control over any potential harm from climate change and not enough to construe a duty of care. It can be accepted that the minister had almost exclusive control over any risk created by the approval of the extension of the mine. But bearing in mind the nature of the harm as a worldwide global climate catastrophe, the control of the minister of the harm is simply not present. He also noted that the concept of control was directly related to the harm that could be caused, not over a tiny increase in the risk of rising temperatures. Additionally, both Beach and Wheelahan were not persuaded that approving the extension of a coal mine would cause injury to the students. Good. From the Epoch Times, arrests of illegal immigrants at the U.S.-Mexico border up 63% in February. The border crisis shows no signs of slowing down under Biden, with arrests of illegal immigrants in February spiking 63% from February 2021. Since Biden stole office in January 2021, he and the top admin officials have relaxed or ended various Trump-era immigration policies, including curbing the use of expulsion powers and cutting deportations. Immigration arrests started spiking the month after Biden was sworn in and have remained at unprecedented levels. The number of arrests in Biden's first year set a record. That record will likely be broken in his second year unless dramatic changes are made, which aren't going to happen. R.J. Howman, head of government relations and communications at the Federation for American Immigration Reform, said the February figures confirm what we already knew. Biden and Mayorkas are not securing our border. They're trying to build up a historic crisis and make mass migration the new normal. What they're trying to do, because they've got all of these dead people from the vaccines, all of the people, remember the spike in people that died, 40%, the highest in the history of the universe, as far as American reporting is concerned. These young people are dying. And so because of that, they need to replace them with other people. So they're getting rid of people that are getting their vaccines, and they're bringing in unqualified people to become peons in the United States of America. Pretty soon, we're going to have a brown America with a few white guys up in Washington ruling it, and they're going to be telling all of these peons what to do. That's just what I think is probably going on. Get rid of the people that are productive, have people that will produce, but only under manual labor, and then control them in that way. Anyway, will say Biden and Mayorkas are not securing our border. They are trying to build up a historic crisis and make mass migration the new normal. In doing so, they are not only undermining our sovereignty, but compromising the health, safety, and security of the American people. Remember, all these people were not required to be vaccinated when they came in last year, and now that's over, but they're still not vaccinating them. And yet all the American people had to be vaccinated. So when all these young people are keeling over because of the vaccines, which we know is true, all of those young people that have died mysteriously, not by COVID, then they have to be replaced with somebody. Plus, we've got all the other people that are dying now because of alcohol addiction, because of drug addiction. We've got America just destroying itself because the left has been pushing their policies. All of these people have to be replaced with somebody. And who is going to do it? A bunch of brown people. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just simply saying this is what they want. They want to have control over these people. These people coming over the border, they don't speak English well, and so they'll just do what they're told to do. They're just going to do their thing. They're going to make their little bit of money, and the people that have survived around the nation are going to be paying the taxes for them to get their government programs in place, and then eventually they will vote out all of the Republican Party in this nation. You can see what's going on. They're just completely tearing apart our nation, and they're doing it with methodical purpose, one step at a time. Get rid of this, destroy that, kill these people, and then pretty soon they'll have their little utopia where the commies will be in charge. There'll be a couple of ruling people and everybody else will all be the same. You won't own anything and you'll be happy. From the Epoch Times, National Park Service denies South Dakota request for Mount Rushmore July 4th fireworks. Okay, now, what month is it? That's right, you're right, it's March. So we got January, February, March. And then from there you go April, May, June, July. Okay, so you got five more months to go. The National Park Service has denied South Dakota Governor Noem's request for fireworks at Mount Rushmore to mark the 4th of July, citing the risk of sparking wildfires. Well, how do they know they're going to have a risk of sparking wildfires 5 months from now? It marks the second consecutive year that Republican governor has been turned down by the agency for a fireworks event at the National Memorial. The U.S. Department of Interior, Mount Rushmore National Memorial Superintendent Michelle Wheatley, in a letter, said that a fireworks celebration at Mount Rushmore would not be safe and responsible. Never mind that it's been going on for years and years and years, and nothing has ever happened. Nobody's gotten exploded, and there's been no forest fires or anything. It's like these stupid states. There's like five states left in the country where you are not allowed to fill your tank at the gas station. I don't know if you know this. I drove around the United States in 2010. I went to all 50 states. I had to fly to two of them. I didn't drive to Hawaii or Alaska, okay? But I went to all of the 50 states. And in five of the states, I could not fill up my tank by myself. And I asked the guy, why? And they said, because it's too dangerous. So it's not dangerous in the other states. 45 states, it's okay. And you go overseas, I've never had anybody fill up my tank anywhere in any of the countries I was ever at. But in five states, Democrat-run states, it's too dangerous for you to fill up your tank. Now, I don't know if they still do that anymore, but this was only in 2010. The governor issued a statement condemning the decision to deny her a permit for the fireworks event. Mount Rushmore is the best place in America to celebrate our nation's birthday. I just wish Biden could see that. He can see that. He hates America, and this is why that's happening. Last year, the president hypocritically held a fireworks celebration in Washington, D.C., while denying us our own event. This year, it looks like they are planning to do the same. From the Wall Street Journal, Saudi Arabia considers accepting yuan instead of dollars for Chinese oil sales. Talks between Riyadh and Beijing have accelerated as the Saudi unhappiness grows in Washington. From the Wall Street Journal, is the dollar in danger? China and Russia may be working to take away America's exorbitant privilege. The U.S. is sitting on top of a horizontal empire, capitalism's self-organizing, incentive-based structure with its layers of value. It's not the Marxist mush of to each according to his needs. You gotta earn your spot. Think of the U.S. dollar as the thread or even the duct tape that binds the layers together. Nearly 60% of the $12.8 trillion in worldwide currency reserves are dollars. Is America's exorbitant privilege, the almighty dollar, as the world's leading reserve currency, under threat? Well, we have a guy in the White House named Biden. He and his people stole the election in order to threaten the U.S. dollar, to collapse the U.S. dollar so that it is not the primary currency of the world. So I would say, yes, it's under a threat. Should you even care? Sanctions have bitten Russia. A huge chunk of its $630 billion in foreign reserves are frozen. Oligarchs' yachts have been seized. Visa, MasterCard, and American Express suspended service in Russia. Apple and Google Pay stoppage stranded cashless travelers on Moscow's metro. From Netflix to Nike, volunteer sanctions are in force. Was cutting Russia out of the global financial system the right move? Naysayers think this is the beginning of the end of the dollar as the reserve currency because Russia will cozy up to China and adopt the yuan or pivot to cryptocurrencies. China may start dumping dollars. In fact, since 2014, China and Russia have severely reduced their dependence on the dollar for bilateral trade. The dollar has been the world's reserve currency since the Bretton Woods Agreement in July of 1944, with the dollar pegged to gold and other allied currencies pegged to the dollar. This wasn't some bureaucratic pronouncement. The U.S. was in a position of strength after funding the Allied effort in World War II. America almost lost this privileged status in 1971 when deficits from war and welfare led President Nixon to drop the gold standard. Today, countries still keep America's virtual Benjamins in their virtual bank vaults, modern banking's gold. China has more than $1 trillion in treasuries. Russia has about $100 billion of about $500 billion in their increasingly frozen foreign exchange. But why do these countries keep dollars? What backs the currency? The conventional answer is the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Ha! That and $3.65 will get you a Starbucks Grand Latte, though not in Moscow anymore. What really backs the dollar, here it is the future tax-generating ability of America's growing productive economy and a defense structure to defend that economy's strength. That's what they say is backing up the dollar. Well, if you are killing off all of your middle-aged people, the productive people of the nation, and bringing in a bunch of people from Mexico to replace them, you are not going to have future tax-generating ability. Also, a productive economy has been harmed already by COVID. It's being harmed by the oil policies of Biden. Pretty soon, we're not going to have enough oil, and people are going to have to start working from home even more. The economy is not going to be able to bear up under it. It's not going to be able to sustain itself. And it says, and a defense structure to defend that economy's strength. Well, what have they been doing? They've been destroying the U.S. military overtly, covertly, in every way they can. They have been taking the U.S. military and tearing it apart, especially with COVID vaccines. They are harming the U.S. military. So the three things that are supposed to be backing up our dollar are all being destroyed by the Biden administration and whoever is pulling his strings. Without that, without those three things, there's no horizontal binding duct tape. South Korea, Thailand, Indonesia, and especially Russia learned this the hard way during the currency crisis of the late 1990s. They didn't keep enough foreign reserves to protect their own currencies after overextending credit and bank loans denominated in dollars came due. Argentina, Venezuela, and Zimbabwe learned this too. China, like Russia, has per capita gross domestic product slightly above Mexico, about 1/6 of the U.S. China's yuan value is based on its economic growth continuing, now forecast at only 5.5% for 2022. While China needs to keep assembling more iPhones, toys, shoes, and grills for global customers, it is struggling to move up to a higher horizontal layer. Whatever China holds in Russian rubles has lost more than 40% of its value in mere weeks. Ouch. If Russia or other countries hold yuan, they risk a similar devaluation if, say, China gets squeezed by sanctions for invading Taiwan. China and Russia should be wary of the mutual delusion of backing only by the ruble and the yuan. And I hope Russia does load up on crypto, the decline of which may make the 90s currency crisis seem like a picnic. Ben Franklin might tell today's U.S. leaders, you have the reserve currency status if you can keep it. Sanctions on Russia won't endanger the dollar right away, but wars are when transitions occur. America, here, listen to this, shouldn't risk its reserve currency status. What do you think they're doing in Washington right now? Risking it. Inflation really will run rampant if other countries start dumping dollars. America's privilege is worth maintaining. Easier said than done. And it's a lot easier to destroy than to maintain. So they're just going to go ahead and destroy it. That's my guess. Hot air. China moves to take over Afghanistan copper, rare earth mineral mining. Shortly after our botched withdrawal from Afghanistan, one of the first developments we noticed taking place was the rapid entry of China into the country. As anyone associated with the American presence there was going into hiding in fear of their lives, China quickly restaffed their embassy in Kabul and moved to normalize relations with the newly arrived Taliban government. They promised a faster flow of relief money and humanitarian aid, a promise which they quickly delivered on. Those moves didn't seem at all surprising at the time. After all, China had already been working overtime to expand their presence and influence to the West, and Afghanistan was a prime candidate. Also, the amount of money it would cost them to get a seat at the table wouldn't be all that high. But did they have something else in mind as well? Apparently so. China appears to have been playing the long game because this week they struck a deal with the Taliban to begin mining one of the richest copper deposits in the world. Afghanistan's other mineral assets will also be on their shopping list, and the Taliban seem all too happy to oblige. This is from the Wall Street Journal now. Following the American exit from Afghanistan, China's move to claim the country's vast mineral wealth is centered on a mountain south of Kabul. The mountain and the barren surrounding valley in Logar province, a two-hour drive from the capital, contain one of the world's biggest untapped reserves of copper. China is negotiating with Taliban authorities to start mining at the site, called Mes Ainak, according to Chinese and Taliban officials. Beijing is also in talks to begin work on oil and gas reserves in the north of the country, Amu Darya. Both projects were on hold for years because of the war, which ended when the Taliban seized power in August. It isn't just copper that China's after, although that's quickly becoming a far more valuable commodity than in the past. Afghanistan is also home to one of the largest untapped deposits of lithium in the world, something I mentioned years ago, and we knew this was the case. That's why we went in to attack Afghanistan. There's certainly no doubt about it, because lithium is what runs the batteries of the world. We never got to those mines because of the war, but they know that they're there. We've known all along, and Biden handed all of this stuff over to the commies. Whoever controls that will have a huge upper hand in the battery market, which is exploding as nations move to green energy and electric vehicles. At Kanishin in Helmand Province, there are rich supplies of rare earth minerals, including lanthanum, cerium, and neodymium. One survey from 2014 estimated that the country has at least $1 trillion in rare earth metals waiting to be exploited. Controlling all of these resources will give China a huge leg up in the 21st century technology market. And they got their hands on it for the price of a supply of bread and vegetables for the starving Afghans and some cash to keep the Taliban afloat as they reestablish their new order. Plus, just think of all the jobs that these mines will create and which the Taliban will be able to take credit for. Never mind the fact that they will be mining jobs with few safety precautions in a place that will probably kill more Afghans than they enrich. As long as they're offering steady paychecks of even a few dollars per day, people will line up to do the work. It's long been known that all of this mineral wealth was buried under the ground in Afghanistan. The problem is, for the last 20 years or more, it's simply been too dangerous for companies to go in there and try to extract them. When a mining operation is under constant threat of attack by terrorists, the thoughts of profits quickly go out the window. But now that the terrorists are the ones in charge and handing out mining permits, China can dive in with both feet in relative safety. You almost have to admire the planning that went into this. And it wasn't as if nobody saw it coming. The left in our country saw it coming, that's for sure. Even as we are still scrambling to get the last of our forces out of the country, CNBC predicted that China would attempt to capitalize on all of the mineral wealth awaiting them there. And now It's happening right before our eyes, and there probably isn't a single thing that anyone can do about it. From GB News, steam trains canceled. National Museum of Wales says invention is rooted in colonialism and racism. A replica of the first steam-powered locomotive in Wales could be relabeled by the National Museum Wales to highlight the slave trade's links to the development of the steam and railway infrastructure in Wales. Richard Trevithick's locomotive was used in the first steam-powered rail journey, which took place at the Penydarren Ironworks in Methyr Tirdyfol, I'm way not pronouncing this right, in Wales in 1804. The Cornish inventor, Mr. Trevithick, had no personal links to slavery, but the NMW determined links between steam train technology and the slave trade, claiming the use of the invention is rooted in colonialism and racism. So the guy that invented this thing and put it all together had nothing to do with slaves or slave trading or anything like that. But because somewhere back in history, some black guy worked on a train, it is colonialist and it is imperialist. The NMW statement said, although there might not be direct links between the Trevithick locomotive and the slave trade, we acknowledge the reality that links to slavery are woven into the warp and weft of Welsh society. So my friend in the UK sent me a photo on this article, and I went and looked it up, and I included it here. But my response to him was that this is true. This is a real crisis. How do we know this? It's because they use coal, which is black. They produce smoke that gets people black. They use black iron in the machinery. Trains are notorious for having some of their color scheme that includes, yes, black. When they run, they go clickety-clack, clickety-clack. If you don't know this, it's true. That is a racist code word for blackety-black. Clickety-clack, clickety-clack. Well, if you go black, you can't go back. If you go black, you can't go back. If you've never heard that song, it's the Kingston Trio. I could go on, but I think you can see how important this issue is. All steam trains and all people who ride on them or talk about them are racist. We need to get the word out. That's what I recommend. From Newsweek, Bill Maher says liberals have changed, rips left on free speech and more. RCP. Bill Maher on Florida's Don't Say Gay bill. Maybe kids that young shouldn't be thinking about sex at all. Breitbart. Bill Maher, we're lumping in Russian people with their government, and if they weren't white, we would call that racism. I wonder if Bill Maher is finally growing a brain. What do you think? I think he's sick of what the left is doing, and he's starting to let people know it. From the Epic Times, Amazon temporarily relocating employees from downtown Seattle office amid rise in violent crimes. Breitbart, Ron DeSantis warns leftists will impose restrictions after the midterm elections. No doubt about it. If you vote Democrat, you are going to be, and they win, you are going to be locked down again. You're going to be told that things are bad and you need to do this, you need to do that. Put on your mask, go get another jab, etc., etc., etc. They will do this. We need to make sure that every person that can vote gets out and votes. From Zero Hedge, WEF issues ominous warning over coming food crisis, recommends more sustainable diets. So you no longer have a right to go down to the store and buy what you want to buy. We've been doing this for years and years and years in America, all over the world. You know, I've been all over the world, even in poor countries. You go and you buy whatever you want. There's all kinds of good food to eat, except in commie nations. But now they're saying that in America, you need to have a more sustainable diet. Did you see the ratio Bloomberg just earned for a tweet which recommends getting used to lentils instead of meat? Switching to public transportation, and avoiding buying things in bulk? The piece, written by economist Teresa, I can't pronounce her last name, recommends that families earning under $300,000 per year consider switching to public transportation, embracing a veggie diet, and rethink those costly pet medical needs. Unsurprisingly, this lady in the far left, New School for Social Research, she works for, is affiliated with the World Economic Forum. the WEF, which, in addition to bragging about having infiltrated various world governments, infamously suggested that people get used to eating bugs due to inevitable food shortages. And yes, which brings us to the WEF's latest warning of an impending food crisis kicked off by the war in Ukraine. Key points: more people around the world will go hungry as a result of the pandemic, high fuel prices and the conflict in Ukraine. Russia and Ukraine are also major producers and suppliers of fertilizers and their raw materials. Existing logistical issues with moving grain and food are likely to worsen. Disruptions will put further pressure on this year's harvest and lead to higher food prices. Even before the pandemic, the FAO estimated that 690 million people, or 9% of the world's populations, were facing food insecurity. In short, the Ukraine war is accelerating the existing problem of inflation and food shortages. So hold on to your hats and consider a more sustainable diet, because things are about to get much, much worse. We are currently witnessing the beginning of a global food crisis, driven by the knock-on effects of a pandemic and more recently in the rise in fuel prices and the conflict in the Ukraine. There were already clear logistical issues with moving grain and food around the globe, which will now be considerably worse as a result of the war. But a more subtle relationship sits with the link to the nutrients needed to drive high crop yields and quality worldwide. In this context, calling for an immediate government intervention to the market is therefore the natural thing to do. Yet, government budgets are severely stretched after COVID, leaving little room for direct monetary support and contribution. In view of the recent promises to remove all Russian oil and gas from our imports, there will be some tough decisions ahead for governments, farmers, and consumers alike. In the medium term, it highlights the need to transform our food system using more green energy. Green energy, that's going to solve our problem. We should also be encouraging more sustainable diets, which contain fewer grain-fed animal products, and regenerative agricultural practices, which improve soil health and efficiency of nutrient use by the crop. Those are all statements from the WEF. Commies looking to destroy your happiness and the world at large. From Mail Online: I fled the Soviet Union when I was 12 for freedom in the U.S. Now I'm seeing socialism here. Ukrainian-born New York City councilwoman reveals why she backs Trump and how she is terrified America is turning into Russia she experienced as a child. One of five Republicans, only five on the 51-person city council, Vernikov's escape from the Soviet Union and rise to councilwoman drew the interest of Trump. Of her time under the old Soviet Union, Vernikov said, "There was nothing ever in the stores. I actually remember the empty shelves. I remember my grandparents heating up water on the gas just to take a shower. What I started seeing all those years ago, it really disturbs me because I started seeing the comeback to socialism here." This is the world we live in, and it is a world that is being run by a bunch of lefties that want to destroy the good thing that's going on. The good thing. But I have to tell you something else. I need to go a little deeper than that, that it is a self-inflicted wound. Because in our prosperity, and if you don't know this, go back and watch Sunday's sermon that we did at the Superior Word. It was Deuteronomy 32, 15 through 22. It was the Song of Moses, part 3. We live in a world where we have grown fat and we have kicked God out of our lives. And because of that, because we have kicked God out of our lives, we are reaping what we have sowed. We start thinking, well, we can do it better than God. We can do it better than God. And that's why people move to the left, is because they want to get away from God. And they want to do things themselves, start tearing babies out of women's wombs and letting criminals out on the streets and all these things. So this is actually our fault. Even if you're not on the left, this is our fault for allowing God to be taken out of our schools, out of our homes, out of our teaching of our children, out of all the places where it used to be normal to talk about him. We no longer do. And unless Jesus Christ is proclaimed in our homes and in our churches and in our schools, we're going to continue down this same sad path. and the left is going to take over, and they are going to bring this world to complete destruction. Now, I know it's going to happen because the Bible says it's going to happen. Isaiah says that I will make man rarer than fine gold. And Jesus said, for the sake of the elect, he's going to come back early, because if he didn't, no flesh would survive. It is our human nature to destroy without God. Without him in our lives, it is our nature. So please turn your heart to the Lord. Turn your heart to Jesus Christ and call on him, and then live for him. Learn his word, and then get into sermons. Get into Bible-based sermons where they evaluate what is being said line by line, word by word, so that you can know the intricacies and the nuances of the word of God. Because without that, all the prophecy updates in the world would do you no good at all. You have a little bit of understanding of what's going on in the world, and everything else is just going around you, and it's getting away from you. And I'm talking about the things like your relationship with God in Christ. Put the word of God first, because that's the only way you're ever going to have that intimate relationship with Jesus, because it's what tells us about Jesus. So please read your word, study your word, and watch sermons that are based on the word of God. And so from Sarasota, Florida to Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, I'm Charlie Garrett, and that is your midweek prophecy report.